Good morning and welcome to the March 7th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for participating and remind you to please mute your computers and silence any electronic devices that you have with you today, which reminds me to do the same thing. Today's meeting is a study and business session with a study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and the afternoon business session starting at 1 p.m. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand or raise your hand electronically. And once we see you, then we will work to arrange for you to speak. When you are recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today, we have all five commissioners present. We also have General Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board. At this time, would you please join Sarah Delosier in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and a safety minute today?
I pledge allegiance to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Good morning, commissioners and all. My name is Sarah Delosier. I am the Customer Service Operations Supervisor here at Chelan PUD. Oh, thank you, Rebecca. I would like to just give a quick safety minute, kind of a merge between HPI and safety, specifically in regards to slips, trips, and falls. You've likely heard the saying, don't cry over spilled milk. While the milk spilled in this picture, we don't know why the child is on the floor. Let's imagine for a moment that this child went to the refrigerator, took the milk out, and was proudly on his way to fill up his cereal bowl at the table. On his way and in a rush, he didn't notice or remember a cord stretched from a plug-in to his electronic device, and yikes, he falls, milk and all. Slips, trips, and falls are the most common form of employee non-fatal work accidents, making up 29% of accidents. And according to the National Safety Council, falls are the second leading cause of unintentional injury-related deaths at home and at work. As employees, we are the solution. Here at Chelan PUD, I've had a wonderful experience recently working with an employee who brought forth a few safety concerns. In one instance, this individual was very concerned about unsecured cords, on the floor in a conference room. While the cords had been previously secured, the situation had changed and gone unnoticed for quite some time. Swift action to remedy the issue included working with facilities to install a cord cover. This small step is helping to prevent someone from being injured at work. Additionally, this experience has brought forth a renewed perspective to pay closer attention to things we are used to but may be amiss. From this experience, I would like to encourage you all to look to see if there are things in your area that could cause a slip, trip, or fall. Thank you so much for your time today and for taking a moment to look around for human performance and safety concerns that could be remedied.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks.
Appreciate the reminder and the good information. I know at my age, when I go to the doctor, they always ask me if I've taken a fall recently. So it is serious, and we do need to pay attention to that. So thank you, Sarah.
You're very welcome. Have a good day.
Thanks, Sarah.
Commissioners, we have been presented an agenda. General Manager Kirk Hudson has recommended Resolution 12 for the consent agenda. For the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commissioner. So commissioners, with the change of item resolution number 12 to the consent agenda, do we have any other changes or questions or comments on the agenda? Okay, with that said, agenda stands as modified. All right. So, Kirk, at this time, I'll turn it over to you and for item number three.
Thank you. Item number three is a quarterly energy resources update, and presenting will be Sean Smith and Janet Jaspers.
Hi, good morning, commissioners and the public. This is Sean Smith here, Managing Director of Energy Resources. Actually, I, along with Mike Bradshaw and John Wisniewski, will be presenting the Q4 update from 2021. This is an update only, no action is required, and the appendix has additional detailed information not covered today. Finally, by resolution, we are required to make this quarterly update to the board. So next slide. Our key takeaways from today will be that key points here is that our wholesale revenue of $66 million was $1 million below the budget. However, with the added additional revenue from other energy-related revenue sources, we've got $37 million above budget. Also, I wanted to give you an update on the resource adequacy program called RAP. And then also with the Western market momentum continuing in the West, we're going to update you on EDAM and SPP Markets Plus. Next slide here. Delving into the net wholesale revenue and other related revenue items for 2021, you'll see the most important number towards the bottom there, $36.7 million over budget, which is a good thing here. On the revenue side, the big number there is the other energy-related items of $37.8 million, along with our real-time revenue of $4.6 million. Those are largely due to the increase in real-time wholesale revenue that we've seen very bullish this year in 2021, I should talk about. Also, slightly under on specified source premium of $1.2 million up at the top there. That's mainly due to an 88% water year. We budget towards the 100% water year. So that's the only reason you see that down a little bit. Next slide. We're going to switch now to the power markets here. With RAP, we've actually, the Northwest Power Pool is now named the Western Power Pool. RAP's expansion across the West, as you'll see here on the right, now includes most states along, that's that dark color there. They thought it would be better representation to be referred to as the Western Power Pool. We're at the detailed design phase is now complete, and the stakeholder input is still underway. We're working through that just to get everything tightened up there. The RA program's been in effect for 21 and 22, and it's already been put to use last summer, both in June and July during those extreme heat waves. It was called upon to be used. We're internally evaluating the potential impacts both on our portfolio and marketing strategy. And so we will continue to do that as updates to the capacity markets get updated and the rules get formalized. As far as the real time, yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but before you move on from this slide, I just have
a question. Sure. Oh, sure. Go for it.
And I'm assuming this is Wyoming. I'm looking at that state, and there are locations that are in the eastern portion of that state, sort of dots in there. Number one, my geography might be off a little bit. Is that Wyoming? Maybe explain why the different parts of the state are involved.
So it just depends on the actual utility. So a particular utility in those different areas can sign up for the market. So we have a long list of companies. I don't know. I can find out for you the exact ones in that area. I've got a list of 26 actual utilities and entities that are now signed up for the market. So I can identify. I'll get you exactly which one that is. That's in Wyoming.
The source of the question, as I recall, some years ago, we were shown a heat map, and there was a pocket that was as white as the mid-seas with respect to hydropower, and it was in Wyoming. And that was the source of the question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. For short-term markets, which are day ahead, real-time, and within the hour, we've got a lot of movement here. So what's happening is the California EDAM market, the CAISO California EDAM market, is looking to go live in 2024, along with the Southwest Power Pool Markets Plus market too. They're both, the 2024 market deadline is really a competition between the two. And so that's why, you know, there's been many starts and stops in the last number of decades here in the Pacific Northwest, but this competition is really breeding a priority for each of these to really get to market as fast as they can. If you go to the next slide there, I tried to expand a little bit on this and show sort of their timelines. And what you'll see is, you know, when you look at EDAM, it's very structured. And this has to do with the CAISO taking the market, really taking a hold of the market structure and the formation, where they have their own people internally designing the market, whereas the Markets Plus is more, they rely on their members to design the market. And so you get a little more optionality when you're in the Markets Plus, because the CAISO controls so much of EDAM. But it just should be known that these dates may change, and there'll be a lot more involvement from us on the Markets Plus side than the EDAM side. Also, when you're looking at the teams, you'll notice there are little differences, especially in governance design and price formation. Now, it's very important for Chelan to have the proper governance structure. As you know, California has issues with their board not being independent. And although they are going to form a committee to work out the governance, it's still a long way from being an independent board, because they would have to change their regulations and their legislation. Right now, their board almost has a fiduciary responsibility, not quite, to the ratepayers of California. Whereas in Markets Plus, right now, you can be on the ground designing a very independent board and have the right governance. Also, price formation, there is nothing in the EDAM that accounts for that. And price formation on the Markets Plus side, what we have here is something that we could properly designed for ramping resources, which the hydro is one of them and one of the weaknesses of EDAM. All that being said, it's important to note, though, that whomever wins this quote competition, that may dry up the market in the Pacific Northwest. So we need to follow to both of these and be prepared that eventually we may have to join one of these markets. But in the meantime, we are working hard in both and see who will be the winner. Next slide. We're going to switch here now to the carbon policies. CETA continues its rulemaking. The latest, we've gone through a number of hurdles here, is they want an IRP hourly analysis as a requirement. And so we don't think that's important at this time. And so we're seeing if we can move the needle there. Also, the Cap and Invest program, it starts in 2023. So rulemaking's ongoing, but there'll be a lot of pressure there to get this program finished by the end of this year so it can start up in 2023. You know, that's a legislative mandate, so there is no possibility of extension. Under the new products and services, what we have here is SPP, Southwest Power Pool, also has currently a WISE program, Western Imbalance, and they've got a few new members, Xcel, Platte River, and Black Hills in Colorado. So they've joined there, and then the CAISO EIM, which is Energy Imbalance Market, it's got BPA, Avista, and Tacoma all signed up now. So you'll see this common theme of SPP and the CAISO kind of battling it out in the West. So just more fuel to the fire there. If I go to the next slide, all our commitments and sales are within the limits for hedging policy defined by that red line there. So not much to report there. And then on the next slide, our fixed price slice contracts, there hasn't been any update here. We're focusing right now on cost of production contract negotiations. So until we finalize those contracts, we want to be sure we don't sell these contracts out into forward years. So next slide. I'm going to turn this over now to Mike Bradshaw, and he'll go through the markets.
All right. Well, thanks, Sean. What you have in front of you here is a graph of daily natural gas prices from April of last year up until the end of last month. They're all on the western side. They're all western states, with the red line being Sumas, which is indicative of the Northwest. What you can see here with Sumas being the red line in December and January timeframe there, where we had the cold events kind of pop up. They're kind of short, but they caused gas prices to run up. And you can see those two couple peaks here in the end of December during that cold snap where they're the highest on the board here. So not atypical. You know, we get cold up here. So as the gas demand increases during that time of the year, it's not too rare to see Sumas kind of pop up during those time frames. So next slide. Next slide. So this is now looking at the March Henry Hub gas contract. So this is looking forward, where the previous slide was looking at dailies. It has, the last time we spoke at a quarterly board update was November 4th of last year. At that time, the March contract was $5.35, and now it's at $4.57. So it's back in November, there was some cold in the forecast. That didn't really didn't materialize, and that's why you see that kind of dip back down, and then it's kind of gone up and down since then, and right now it's settled at $4.57. And the next slide. Switching to power prices. As we know, gas price drives power price often. So what you see here is that dotted gray line was the forward price curve back on November 1st of last year when we set the budget for 2022. And that blue line is prices as of February 24th. The blue and the black are on top of each other. So what you see is a definite increase in the forward prices since November of last year. The biggest change right there on those peaks, which is over Q3, kind of the summertime, where there's scarcity concerns, you know, the blackouts that happened in California. There's just some supply concerns, and so that's being reflected there in the forward price curve. And next slide. This is our current net wholesale revenue forecast plus off-system end-use sales. That black line, kind of in that top bunch, is the current forecast as of January 13th. And then, of course, the other color lines were the forecast in previous board updates. just kind of two groupings. As you can see, the change was changed to cause those two groupings is really the increase in the forward prices. So still kind of sitting close to where that grouping was in the last couple updates. And with that, I'll hand it over to John to talk about Lake Chelan and water supply forecast.
Great. Thank you, Mike. You can go to the next slide. So for Lake Chelan, just to orientate you to the graph here, the blue shaded region is the forecasted operating range as of October 1st. And that kind of peach orange colored band is the current forecasted operating range. And that dark green line are actual lake levels to date. So if you look at the end of November to early December timeframe, you can see that dark green line had a couple of kind of moved upwards. So normally we're drafting the lake during that time frame, but there was some warm weather and rain, and that rain on snow caused a couple of inflow events in that late fall, early winter timeframe. And we did respond by increasing spill a little bit to help manage lake levels in addition to full generation. But that did move lake levels a little bit up outside of our October 1st forecasted operating range. Since that time, lake levels have drafted quite nicely and come down quite a bit, but still remain a little bit outside of that October 1st forecast operating range. And if you look at the peach band going forward, you can see that the model indicates that for the next month or so, maybe 2 months, we might maintain a little bit above that normal operating range, but should move back in to that blue range and have a pretty normal refill looking forward, pending the weather, of course. And next slide. And for the water supply forecast on the top, you'll see Lake Chelan. This is from the Northwest River Forecast Center. They were predicting 86% of average as of the first of this month. We were able to conduct a snow survey, and our internal forecast was for 93% of average. So our internal forecast is tracking a little bit higher than that of the Northwest River Forecast Center for the Lake Chelan Basin. But both of them are tracking below average, below 100%. In the bottom of that slide there at Grand Coulee for the Columbia River, the forecast is for 105% of average. So the upper Columbia is tracking above average water supply. So good healthy year on the Columbia. Pending any questions, I'll pass it over to Sean for some more market information.
Okay, next slide there. So in the market info, what we've seen here is corporate renewable energy deals. These are mainly large data centers has really increased. They broke records in 2021. So there are a lot. There's the Googles, the Amazons, the Microsofts of the world all are going very strong into renewable energy. That along with cryptocurrency and the Washington state legislature rules on has really increased the pricing of hydro up in the Pacific Northwest. So just wanted to alert you to the fact there. Commissioner Arsenault, it's Black Hills Energy that has serves load in Wyoming that is part of RAP. So just for your information, that's why partial part of that map is right.
Thanks, John.
And then, sure. Next slide there. So, you know, we've had a very strong year with the market being strong and having $37 million higher than revenue. And that will, you know, for the foreseeable future, the market with that strong demand, we see still a very strong price curve in the Mid-Sea. So, also, RAP and the Western markets, RAP's progressing as we'd like to see, and we hope to get that off the ground officially, you know, through a FERC filing. And finally, you know, for this competition as between EDAM and Markets Plus has really pushed the path forward to potential markets up here. I know a lot of people, I'm newer to the market up here, and a lot of people will say, we'll wait and see, but we have to plan as if in case one of these does happen. So we are actively involved in both and, you know, watching and planning just in case one of these does happen. And with that, I'll open it up to any questions.
Commissioners, any questions for the team? Dennis.
Yeah, we have an app that is called Currents. And one of the things that I would like to see added to that app would be the snow levels as the year progresses, both at Chelan and then the Canadian snowpack. Just for a reference point, and I don't know what kind of staff time that would consume to do. It's not a heavy item for me, but one that I would have just interest in tracking.
Okay. We can put it on our list, and we'll get back to you on what the resource requirement would be for that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Sean and team, thank you very much for the update.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Kirk, ready to move on?
Yep. Our next item, agenda item number 4, is the Tumwater Dam update with Aileen Underwood, who's here in the boardroom with us. And this is regarding some upcoming work, maintenance work at the dam, as well as some public outreach coming down the pike. So, Aileen?
Hi, good morning, Commissioners. I'm Aileen Underwood, the manager of Fish and Wildlife Programs here at the district. Thanks for having me this morning. So this morning, I'd like to talk a bit about Tumwater Dam maintenance needs and our related proposed public outreach. So I'd like to chat a bit about the history of Tumwater Dam. We don't talk about that dam very much. Talk about the maintenance, both what we've already conducted and what we see that we need to conduct in the future, and then talk about a draft public outreach plan. So briefly, a bit of history about Tumwater. Tumwater Dam was constructed in 1909 by the Great Northern Railroad to power trains over Stevens Pass. It was leased then by Puget Power and Light for about 25 years in there. And then power production actually ceased in 1956 when a rock slide damaged the penstock, which was located about 2 miles downstream of where the dam is today. So Chelan acquired the dam in 1957, about the same time we acquired Rock Island Dam. And then interestingly, Bonneville Power Administration funded reconstruction of the fishway to its modern configuration in 1986. And the reason for this was one of a suite of potential projects that BPA could have selected for upstream mitigation, and this is one of the ones they chose. So currently, again, this is a non-power generating dam, but it does serve a lot of really important functions. For us, the district, we conduct our adult fish collection at the fishway. This fulfills our hatchery mitigation obligations for both Rock Island and Rocky Reach habitat conservation plans. And it's also important to note that the dam itself is not included in any FERC license. It is regulated by the Washington Department of Ecology's Dam Safety Office, like other low-head dams in the state. And again, it's not just the district that does important work at the Tumwater Fishway. There are several other entities that conduct work at the fishway. Most specifically, to be clear, we collect spring Chinook, steelhead, and summer Chinook adults for our broodstock needs for hatchery programs. We have a facility use agreement with Grant PUD that allows them to collect their spring Chinook and summer Chinook requirements at the fishway. We also have a facility use agreement with the Yakima Nation, and they collect their coho broodstock as part of their coho reintroduction program that's funded primarily through BPA, Grant PUD, and Chelan PUD. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service uses the dam to collect stray hatchery fish that they manage. So they rear fish at the Icicle Hatchery down there in Leavenworth, and any fish that should have returned to the icicle but head upstream, if they're identified at Tumwater, they're collected there. And then finally, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife conducts adult hatchery fish management for spring chinook and steelhead. And what this does is this ensures that the appropriate number of hatchery fish are allowed to return to the spawning grounds. So why are we here today? We're here today to talk about some past and future maintenance that needs to occur at the dam. So first, we have already conducted the first chunk of the maintenance that needed to occur at the Fishway Foundation. That was completed in 2021. Our next part of the maintenance needs to happen what's called to the dam apron. So the apron is the concrete structure that actually sits in front of the dam. And we noticed some erosion, some voids that we've actually been tracking for quite some time. And so we need to conduct a major maintenance project to fix those voids and to correct that erosion. Before we can do that project, we do continue to annually monitor that to see how the erosion is progressing. We do need to conduct the work imminently because we need to continue to meet dam stability criteria under those Department of Ecology regulations. The cost estimate for the work is pretty high level, anywhere from $2.5 million to somewhere around $4 million. We won't know until we go out to bid, but so far that's kind of where the engineer's estimate is. And it's important to note that it does require the U.S. Army Corps of permit that will include consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service under the Endangered Species Act to conduct that work. And we did submit our permit applications in early February. So because we're preparing for a major maintenance project at the dam, we do desire, and presumably similar types of routine maintenance will need to occur in the future, we desire to understand our customer owner perspectives on that long-term maintenance of the dam. That's beyond what the imminent maintenance needs are. So to capture this, we are proposing to do a public outreach meeting in either May or June, somewhere near Leavenworth. We plan to invite our facility users, those that I mentioned before, as well as the general public. This will likely be a combination of an open house to solicit input from our customer owners and two questions from an online survey for those who are unable to attend in person. We're still developing the format for this, but once we do, additional information can be found on our website. With that, I would like to turn it over to any questions.
Ann? Go ahead, Ann.
Thanks. Thank you. Arlene, so can you just give us generally what those questions will be, what the kind of the general theme of you know, what we're going to take out to the public?
Right. So again, I mentioned these are still in draft, but something along the lines of, you know, how often our customer owners either visit the dam or any uses that they do around the dam. And perhaps, you know, given the understanding of all of the additional uses with our stakeholders that use the dam, you know, how do they value Tumwater Dam, and perhaps this would be a ranking of sorts. We still haven't completely fleshed that out.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for Arlene? Great, thank you, Arlene, for the update on the progress, where you're moving in that direction. And
thank you.
And those dates posted on your presentation there when those open houses are?
Not yet. Actually, we're only planning to conduct one open house. We're currently working with communications to solidify a date in either late May or early June.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Legislative update.
Yeah, we have Dave Arbaugh and Tracy Yunt with us today. Lots of activity on the legislative session.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. Tracy Yunt, External Affairs, and Dave Arbaugh, contract lobbyist in Olympia. So next slide, please. We're going to give an update on the session and have no decisions required today. Just give you a little update on where we were. February 22nd was the last board update. Since then, we've had the bills out of committee, bills out of opposite committee, and then just this last March 4th, opposite house cutoff deadline, which did lead to a number of changes. We're still anticipating ending on time March 10. And I know Dave is really excited about it ending on March 10. Next slide, please. So first, Dave is going to cover the budget issues. And then after that, I will do the policy issues on the remaining slides. So Dave, take it over.
I will. Thanks, Tracy. Good morning, everyone. I am looking forward to March 10th. This is a short session, as Tracy indicated. We're closing in on the final days now. The main job of the legislature is to approve supplemental budgets. There are three budgets: operating, transportation, and capital. Budget negotiations are rumored to have wrapped up over the weekend, and so we're sort of waiting to see the final documents which contain the agreements and expect to see those final conference reports tomorrow. A few issues that we've been watching pretty closely throughout this session. First one is arrearages. As the pandemic got underway over a year ago, utilities started talking about the need to provide some kind of customer assistance for people that have fallen behind as a result of the pandemic, fallen behind in customer in utility bills. And overall, about a month ago, we identified around $280 million worth of need. The governor included about $100 million for customer assistance purposes in his budget, which he rolled out in December. The House, in their budget, included about $150 million. The Senate, about $100 million. So we're waiting to see how all of that shakes out. There, of course, with any kind of negotiation, there have been a few bumps along the way, but we are quite hopeful that we're going to see some help for customers along these lines in the final budget negotiations. There is funding for the governor's office to continue work looking at their Snake River dams. There's about $350,000 in both the House and Senate budgets for that purpose. Because about the same amount of money is in each budget, we don't expect that that's going to be a subject of negotiations, and I expect that that money will be in the final budget. Over in the capital budget, there's funding for broadband, and then more recently in the transportation budget, there's been quite an interesting little flap that I'm sure you've heard about. The transportation budget originally included about a 6% per gallon export fuel tax for fuels that are refined in Washington and then sold out of state. That caused the reaction in neighboring states that purchased that fuel. And so the House modified the Senate transportation budget, taking out that export fuel tax, replacing it with a sweep of the Public Works Assistance Account. That $100 million per year sweep of the Public Works Assistance Account triggered a strong negative response from a lot of local governments that rely on the Public Works Account to fund critical infrastructure. So I think what's happening now is that some kind of a modified sweep is going to show up in the transportation budget, where some funding, but not the $100 million level, will be pulled out of the assistance account and then supplemented with other sources like MOTCA. But those are the highlights for the budget. So next slide.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Some movement on some legislative priorities. Wildfire liability. Originally, you might recall, we were opposed to this bill. A lot of work happened during the session to move it into a place that would be acceptable. Turning it in some part to a study bill. That bill has is now technically dead, but keep in mind that we will probably be seeing this title or something like this next year. So technically dead, but it won't be forgotten when we start up next year. Water power license fees, deferring the sunset to 2029, that is moving to the governor's desk for signing. And the third is the net ecological gain that, again, has met a technical death. Study language, however, may show up in the final budget deal. We're monitoring that closely. And this is the concept of adding salmon recovery goals in the Growth Management Act and the Department of Fish and Wildlife, basically developing criteria for defining net ecological gain. All right, next slide, please. Energy issues. The hydrogen bill is moving ahead. A point of interest on this, it's creating a definition of green hydrogen that aligns with CETA. So producers would be able to get credit for CETA obligations. Next slide. Public Works Board grants and loans, HB 1673, funds telecom deployment, that's moving ahead and we are in support of that. Next slide, please. Human resources, the paid family medical leave. Basically, this is requiring reporting and measures to improve financial elements of the program. It also now includes a null and void clause that would be triggered if funds are not in the budget. Next slide, please. Our favorite slide, other issues. There are none. Next slide, questions.
Commissioners, any questions for Dave? Tracy. All right. Gentlemen, thank you for the update and presentation. And Dave, keep smiling as you get closer to that date.
That's almost a real smile there.
That's right. I'm working on it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Okay. Fiber rate update.
Yeah, this is an update from Bob Shane. There's actually a resolution in the afternoon tied to this. You did see a fiber rate proposal on November 1st, and with the full intention of having that approved in December, and Bob's done some outreach to arrive at some proposed modifications. That's why we're bringing it back this morning. So, Bob?
Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, Commissioners. Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber Telecom. As Kirk highlighted, here we're back again to give you an update to the telecom fiber rates. As it has changed from our last November 1st presentation, I'll highlight those specific changes here and answer any questions as we go along the way here. So you recall, we did provide an update on November 1st since that time, and there was a period of time that it took to reach out to our providers. And really, once we had the proposed rates of November 1st, we went back to some of our key providers, and we had spent quite a bit of time in looking at our rates, specifically the virtual VLAN, local area networks, the VLAN services. With that, we took a lot of input from them, and we'll get a little bit more into it here, but there was a need to change those rates. As Kirk mentioned, we are looking to get board approval based on what we presented back in November 1st with the following changes that I'm about to go through here in this presentation. We are looking to get these rates effective April 1st of this year. Next slide, please. So I'll highlight on the VLAN rate changes. It's directly related to enabling our providers to remain competitive in a very aggressive telecom market, specifically for high-speed advanced services. In talking with the providers, they're getting a lot of, competition from other providers that would provide similar services at a lower cost. And some of that's in considered overbuild, which is something we want to make sure we stay ahead of. We don't want to encourage a provider to come in and overbuild Chelan County PD's fiber system. And so this rate is helping our customers, to stay, our providers, that is, stay with us, knowing that we're providing a reliable and very competitive service. A key thing to note is back on November 1st, we also made some changes to the local loop rate. This change that I'm proposing today does not change what we initially provided the board back on November 1st. So there are no proposed changes to the DLL loops, loop rates. Go on to the next page, please. So the VLAN solution, so I'm going to highlight really the difference between what we proposed in November 1st and where we are today. We're still restructuring those VLAN rates. What we really did was, in this latest go-around, was we created a tiered rate that was, we thought was the best thing for our service providers at the time. It made a lot of tactical sense, but in the bottom, when it was all said and done, the rates were still too high. So we decided to simplify the rates, remove the tiered services, and just change the overall VLAN rate, which I'll show you here in a moment. So the big change from November 1st was the elimination of the tiered services and a new change or new rate to the particular service. We're still adding the 10 gig services new, and we're still eliminating the contract terms that we had previously. Next slide, please. So this is what was presented in November 1st. I highlighted by the strike lines here what we're eliminating. So if you'll take a look there, we had the incremental rates of 200 megabits to up to 1 gigabit and the incremental 1 gig. That was what we had provided back on November 1st. We're going to eliminate those, finding that those are not necessary. But those particular incremental rates will be absorbed into our new revised rates, which I'll show you here in a minute. And this is identical for both the business class and the carrier class. So if you move to the next slide, please, Rebecca. So in a very similar sense here on the carrier class, we remove the incremental speeds that we have for both the gigabit and the 10 gigabit service. So those are the primary differences between what we provided back on November 1st and what we plan to go with going forward. And there's a next slide has a VLAN revenue comparison to help you understand the difference. Next slide, please. Now this VLAN comparison is between what we had provided in November and what we're proposing today, but it does not, since November 1st was not implemented, this is purely a reference between the changes between what we previously provided in November 1st and what we have here. I think the key thing you'll probably want to know is that as a result of our May 7th rate change, we are going to see an estimated reduction of revenue of about $76,000 for this adjustment. This is necessary to keep our services competitive. We're not particularly concerned about this reduction in revenue in the sense that we do anticipate we'll see some, because of the rate change, some additional growth, both in the services that we're offering and the new service, which is a 10 gig service. So we think we're going to make it up. This $76,000 reduction is really a south side analysis. This is assuming nothing changes. We simply change the rates, but we anticipate that we're going to see some value of this and get some of that revenue back. And the next slide, please. So commissioners, that's it in a nutshell. Are there any questions that you have related to this proposal?
Bob, could you go back to slide 4 for a minute, please?
Sure.
And as Rebecca's pulling that up, I don't remember what I was looking at, but the question that I have, Bob, is this affecting any of our customers that are at the very lowest end of services provided, that they're barely affording to get some type of service? Are we impacting them at all?
Commissioner, that's a great question. The answer is absolutely not. So these VLAN services are for the business type customers, and we're very very careful to make sure that our DLL rate, which is more the residential service, were not impacted by this.
Okay. So the answer to the question is no. Okay, great. Because I think what I saw was eliminate 50 and megabits. Is that MBPBS? Is that what that stands for?
Yes, megabits per second. Uh-huh.
Lowest tier service. So I was just seeing eliminate lowest tier service. That's what caught my eye. And I wanted to make sure that we weren't impacting that service.
Right. So that 50 megabits lower tier service is really a legacy service for businesses. Nobody,
right.
That's really not used anymore because the bandwidth consumption and need is so high now. At one time that made some sense, but for most businesses, all businesses, that's inadequate speeds. And so we have eliminated that simply because there was very little take for that. And actually what's going to happen is that service will move at a lower rate up to a higher speed. So we're bringing some real value and benefit to our small businesses here in Chelan County by doing that.
Okay. Other questions, commissioners?
Yes.
Randy has one.
You bet. And I'll see if I can figure out how to put my hand down. There we go. Bob, you mentioned early in your presentation, I guess, you know, for lack of better terms, attempting to prevent an overbuild by privates. How, you know, I know that we've in the past had conversations and tried to get some of the private carriers to participate in our open network. Is that effort going anywhere?
Commissioner Smith, that's something that's always open, and we've always engaged when we could with our local competitors to work jointly. Most recently, we spent quite a bit of time with Ziply, formerly Frontier, to see if we couldn't come up with some partnerships in the Valley. We spent quite a bit of time looking at the different possible ways to integrate. And the bottom line was our business models are so different that it was really difficult to find a common platform of which we could both succeed successfully. And so we're not giving up, but there are differences in those business models. And because of that, the solution sets on both sides are far enough apart where it just doesn't seem to bring value to our customer owners or our businesses here in Chelan County. But we continue to have those conversations whenever we can and to look for those opportunities as they present themselves.
Okay. Thank you.
Dennis.
Bob, how many customers does this affect?
There's roughly well under 200 customers total between these two VLAN rate changes. And really, let me correct that. I say 200 businesses, really 200 services. So some services have multiple, or some customers have multiple services. So you're probably talking about maybe just a half a dozen of actual customers that this will impact. And I can provide you that specific information if you like.
No, that's good enough. Thank you.
Yeah, these customers, Commissioner, are large companies on the carrier class. They're really a specialized service for cellular, and then the other ones are small businesses here in the county.
Okay, thank you.
Gary.
Thank you. Bob, this is a question really that originates from the past. I think in several years ago, we talked about the school district having their own network. Can you bring me up to speed on whether or not any of these changes might entice the school district to take a second look?
I could get the specifics to you. I don't know off the top of my head. But some of the changes here, the schools relatively use small bandwidth, so in many cases, they'll actually benefit on this. The higher cost rate changes that you're seeing are really related to the carrier class, which is more specific to cellular type companies, not so much the school district. But I would have to go back, Commissioner, and I can give you a list specifically on how that's going to impact the schools.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Bob. By the way, good job. I appreciate you staying competitive.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for Bob? Okay. All right. We'll address that resolution later. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Commissioners.
All right. Kirk, at this time, and Rebecca, we will open it up for any public comments that we may have.
I don't see any virtual hands raised.
Okay. And I'm not hearing anything. So it is almost 11 o'clock and we are ahead of schedule. So we'll continue with our agenda. And remind me, Kirk, do we have to jump ahead to manager items?
Yeah.
We're going to leave. Okay.
Yeah, I think what we do is move to manager items and commission items and see where we end up there. And then we've got a few options to be thinking about after that, whether to jump into some resolutions or whether to begin an executive session.
Okay.
So I'll go ahead and start with manager items. We have Katie Marshall on. I'd like to have her give you an update on automated metering infrastructure outreach plan. Katie?
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Katie Marshall. I'm the project manager for the AMI project. Today, I'm just giving you a brief update on the progress that we've made since the contract was approved late last spring. There's been a lot of work that has occurred since that contract approval that pretty much puts in place the technical foundation that's needed to support advanced meters. But this spring, we're going to be moving into an exciting phase of the project, which is the beta phase. And that's where we'll begin deploying meters to like a small subset of our customer base. We're really excited that we're moving to that point because that's when those customers are going to start seeing some of the benefits that the AMI technology brings. Some of those benefits include faster outage notification and restoration, more accurate billing and fewer estimated bills. And in the future, AMI does create a foundation for expanded services such as prepayments on accounts, high use alerts, web-based tools for energy savings, that kind of thing. Also, as a reminder, a program was approved in 2020 for those customers who desire to opt out of advanced metering. A resolution will be brought forward this afternoon to formalize the associated language changes to Rate Schedule 1 for that. Next slide, please. There's numerous outreach channels that we're going to utilize to keep customers, along with district staff, apprised of the progress of the project as we prepare to deploy meters. The first of which is going to be a brief update in the connected newsletter that's going to be going out next week. There's also several communications that will be mailed to customers prior to exchange of their meter, beginning with a 60-day out notice, kind of letting them know what to expect, and more detail around the enhanced benefits and that those meters bring. That will be followed by another mailer that's sent to them about 3 to 4 weeks before the meter exchange, as well as one the day of. There's a couple other key resources to note. The AMI website is live and it has a lot of good information that we will continue to update, including FAQs. As well as a designated email and hotline for any AMI-related questions. There's several other avenues and channels that we've listed there that we'll also be utilizing to keep everyone apprised of the progress and informed on what the technology brings benefit-wise to our customers. That's pretty much all I had as far as an update goes, so I'll open it up to any questions.
Commissioners, I have a question.
Thank you. Yeah, Katie. So, could you remind us what the opt-out policy is? It's been quite a while since we talked about that.
Sure. I know we have it coming forward this afternoon, so but basically it's just a policy in place that gives our customers an option to apply to opt out of having an advanced meter on their home.
So
Commissioner Congdon,
talk about this later.
Yeah, Commissioner Congdon, this is Eric. Just to get to your point, the opt-out provision or program that we have will come forward this afternoon as part of a resolution. You recall back in 2020 we had a resolution asking the staff to go develop language to include within the rate that opt-out provision based upon the board's then guidance. So staff's done that, and they're just bringing that specific language forward for your review and adoption this afternoon. To summarize, it basically, on certain conditions, gives customers who don't desire to have an AMI meter the right to opt out, and the charge that was imposed by the or adopted by the board back in 2020 was $25 per month. So that, in a nutshell, is the program.
Okay. We'll look at it again this afternoon. Thank you.
Any other questions for Katie? Katie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Katie. I've got one more item. Is Brett Pickford on? Looks like he's on.
Yes, Kirk, I'm on.
Okay. Just wanted to introduce Brett Pickford as the Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. I sent a notification out in January that Brett was selected from an extremely qualified group of candidates, both internally and externally. He was selected based on his extensive experience, passion for public service, teamwork, and his proven track record of sustaining a high level of performance. Brett's been with Chelan PUD since 1993. Last 7 years, Brett has been the Director of Engineering and Project Management and was the Hydro Engineering Manager for 11 years. Prior to that, Brett also worked for Chevron prior to coming to the district. Really happy that Brett has started this new position as of last Monday. And it's at a time where we've been undertaking the largest reinvestment effort at the hydros since the dams were built. Brett has a tremendous amount of background and experience on everything we've been doing at the dam since the time he's been here. So happy to have him on board, and you can see he's there in his new office. And I'd also like to take the opportunity to publicly thank Dan Garrison, who's been serving as the acting managing director since the beginning of the year until Brett could transition into the role. So welcome, Brett.
Yeah, thank you, Kirk. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Congratulations. Congratulations, Brett.
Thank you, Commissioner Congdon.
Happy to have you aboard.
Dennis, were you going to say something? You look like you were about ready to talk.
Oh, I was just going to pop off as usual. I think Brett's hairline matches the hairline of most of the commissioners. And so I don't know if you're in good company or bad company.
Definitely good company.
Brett, good. Welcome aboard. Really happy regarding your selection. And pleased that we're going to have the opportunity to continue to work together, and you in an expanded category from where you've been, and confidence in your abilities. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Bowles.
Well, again, congratulations, Brett, and good luck in the new position. And you have a lot ahead of you, a lot of work to do. So I appreciate that. All right.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting decade going forward with Powerhouse 2.
That it is. All right.
And that's all I have for manager items.
Okay. Commissioners, let's go ahead and move into commissioner items. Does anybody have anything? We You do need to set a... Gary, go ahead.
I just wanted to let commissioners know and others that last week I was in Washington, D.C., representing the district at the APPA conference. Had an opportunity to sit with many of our legislators and chat with them about issues. My topic of discussion was primarily focused around the Columbia River Treaty. I will say that while we continue to support the verbiage for termination of the treaty, there is new language being introduced. We're trying to gauge the acceptances of the concept of a domestic approach, which would really turn the responsibility back over to the federal government to provide relief from the dollars that we send to Canada relative to the treaty. Now, this would be a concept that is being exercised at all other federal projects. If you look at the Tennessee Valley Authority, the ratepayers there do not pay for flood control. So we're trying to level the playing field and take a look at how flood control is compensated for in other parts of the country on federal projects. I will tell you that we received very positive feedback from the concept as PPC is continuing to tear into this idea and refine it going forward. But so far, we've had real positive feedback on that approach. It was a really good conference, good meeting, a lot of good results. We had tremendously engaged legislators, so much so that many of them were on the edge of their seat as they were talking about the various topics and listening to what we as a collective had to say. So probably the single best conference, APPA conference, I have attended in my term as a commissioner.
Great. Thank you, Gary. Randy?
Yes.
Yeah, a question for Gary. Just get clarity. This proposal that's emerging about the Columbia River Treaty, would that be putting federal dollars back into our coffers in replacement of what's being taken out by the Canadian entitlement at this point?
That is the proposal at this point, Randy. And like I said, this still has to be refined. But that is the current proposal, is that the federal government would compensate the hydro projects for those dollars being sent to Canada.
Well, without being judgmental, I would just have to say it makes me nervous.
Well, it's still being worked on. As I said, PPC yeah. is still trying to find the concept. This was really just an introduction to gauge the receptiveness of the legislators if we were to pursue this at greater length. And, of course, the issue here is that we've been beating this dead horse for 10 years. We need to be creative and come up with another solution. And the message that I heard was we're being applauded for at least trying to think out of the box and trying to come up with creative alternatives. And I think that's really what the legislators are looking for. Find a way to get this ball down the field.
Ann? Go ahead, Ann.
Yeah, thanks. I understand. I understand where you're coming from on that. But I'm kind of sitting maybe where Randy is. It makes me nervous, and it makes me wonder, so are we going to turn away and not request any kind of a modification, adjustment, a more, more equity in terms of our arrangement with the Canadians?
Well, Anne, I think the message was really clear that we continue to support termination of the treaty. But in terms of gauging a methodology, a creative methodology, for getting some traction with the Canadian treaty. That's what PPC is doing. We're trying to explore what can get this ball moving down the field. How can we be creative? We've taken 10 years and gotten nowhere. What can we do that can get us somewhere? So it's not a finalized proposal, but it is one that is seeking comment and looking for creativity.
So it's not resigning ourselves to the fact that we cannot get any satisfaction from the Canadians in terms of modifying this treaty.
I think because it is in work in project, or it's in process, the final product might look like a compromise between the two. It's not finalized, mm-hmm. and that's the point, is that they're looking for ways to modify and find traction on the Canadian treaty. And simply doing repeatedly what we have done for 10 years with no results, I think that was supposed to be the definition of insanity. So we have to find other ways to be creative to try to move the ball down the field. And it might be, as I suggested, a combination of what we currently are offering plus federal subsidies. As it was pointed out, the Tennessee Valley Authority has never charged ratepayers flood control.
Maybe that puts some pressure on our government to keep coming back to the table and working too. So I'm not sure. All right.
Well, stay tuned. There'll be more coming on that. So this is your first introduction to it. Yeah. There'll be more information as this thing is further solidified.
Okay. Anything else? We do have to set a date for our annual strategy partners meeting. Commissioners, do I have somebody who would like to make a motion on that?
Mr. President, I'll make a motion to move to set a special meeting on Tuesday, April 19, 2022 at 9:30 a.m. to be held virtually for the purpose of holding an annual strategy partners update meeting. Virtual meeting information will be posted on the PUD website.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Commissioner McKenna. Oh. I might suggest Rebecca's prepared to circle back up at agenda item number 17, the travel.
I missed that one. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rebecca.
Good morning. I'm sitting in for Lisa this morning. So in March, we have the Waputa Association meetings coming up the 16th through the 18th. I show everyone wants to attend virtually, except I'm not sure about you, Commissioner Arsenault, if you're planning to attend virtually or in person.
That will be, I will attend that virtually.
Okay. And then the quarterly water committee meeting is coming up on March 24th. Commissioner Congdon, will you be attending that?
Yes, I will.
Virtually?
Yes.
Okay. And then in April, the Waputa meetings will be held on the 13th through the 15th. Are folks prepared to make a decision on those?
I will be attending in person.
Okay.
This is Steve. I will be, I'll be attending virtually on that.
Okay.
Virtually for me.
Thank you.
And Ann.
Got it.
And Dennis, virtual.
Perfect. Okay. And thank then you. Commissioner McKenna is scheduled to attend the Energy Northwest meeting on April 27th. Does that still work for you?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And then in May, I think there's going to be a Waputa Telecom workshop, but that date looks like it hasn't quite been set yet. And then the NWPPA annual conference is coming up in Coeur d'Alene, May 22nd through 25th. And I just wondered if anyone had thought about that far ahead yet or wanted to
I'll be attending in person.
Okay. I haven't decided yet, Rebecca.
Okay.
Okay. Dennis, probably not.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably not. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll let you
and I don't think I will.
I probably will attend, but probably virtually.
Okay. And unless you want to go further, I think 2 months out, 3 months out is probably
I think sufficient. That's fine. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank
Sorry
you.
I missed that.
That's okay.
Okay, I think we're finished with commission items. It's 11:15. Kirk, do we want to go ahead and move into executive session, or what do you recommend here?
My recommendation would be to move into executive session for the balance of the time this morning. I think that would help a great deal in terms of length of the afternoon session.
Okay. So we will go into executive session for until noon. We will come back out at 1 p.m. for our business session, and then depending upon how we do this morning, we may go back into executive session this afternoon, which I expect. So at that time, we will recess and go into
Commissioner, we will need to read the reasons.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, yes. Thank you very much.
Thank Rebecca. She was throwing something at me across
the room. Yeah, I saw the hand signals there. I was getting ready to pause, so thanks, Rebecca. So we will move into recess into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigations to which the district or its board is likely to become a party and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 4230 and to plan the strategy or position to be taken during the course of collective bargaining as authorized by RCW 4230.140. And we are going to recess and go and move into executive session. Or excuse me, it's March 7th, 2022. No decisions were made, no votes were taken. Is there any additional? Let's see. So we will recess at this time for lunch and resume at 1 o'clock for our business afternoon session. Thank you. Good afternoon and welcome to the March 7th, 2022 business session of the Chelan Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices that you have with you today. When you're off mute, and until that time, please mute your screens to keep our noise level from reverberating. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand to either physically or electronically notify us that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us, which includes item number 12. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I so move.
Second.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion is carried. Okay, Kirk, resolutions 10, 11, 12, 10, 11, 13, 14, and 15.
Okay.
I'll turn this over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Resolution number 10 is a resolution authorizing the general manager to enter into a services agreement, SA22-12086, with Four Peaks Environmental Science and Data Solutions, LLC of Wenatchee, Washington, for conducting a 2022 Rock Island subyearling fish passage and behavior study with us as Lance Keller.
Thank you, Kirk. Can I get a quick audio check? Does everyone hear me okay? Thumbs up?
We can hear you fine.
Yeah, great, thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Lance Keller, Senior Fisheries Biologist for the District. It was a pleasure to be in front of you. Today I have a resolution, as Kirk outlined, with Four Peaks Environmental to conduct a subyearling Chinook behavior and passage study at Rock Island Dam in the project area in 2022. We did have Four Peaks conduct a much smaller yet successful study effort in 2021, taking advantage of the gear that was deployed for the spring HCP survival confirmation study. But this year we're coming back to gain some additional knowledge, and this will be a sole effort at Rock Island Project in 2022. This would essentially establish a contract and requesting from Four Peaks that they actually deploy and retrieve the detection gear pre and post study in the Rock Island Project area and immediately downstream of Rock Island Dam, and also procure tags, tag study fish, and then track them as they move through the study area. We've been in front of the board before, talked about subs quite a bit. Just want to remind folks that, you know, we have talked a lot about the yearling Chinook, the spring species of the HCP, but definitely subbreeding Chinook are the summer species that migrate past our projects. They are part of the HCP, and as such, it's our responsibility to evaluate their survival through the Rock Island Project area. While it currently remains unclear if juvenile project survival can be accurately calculated free of bias for subyearlings, we do want to maintain our good relationship with HCP signatories by progressing forward, when reasonable, with evaluating subyearling Chinook behavior and passage at Rock Island. District staff have continued to monitor the evolution and advancements in active tag technology to study a much smaller fish such as subyearling. We have over the last few years seen great leaps in the transmitter size shrinking and the battery life increasing, which is what we need to start actually thinking about evaluating passage and behavior with subyearlings. I will note, while it's not 100% optimal, we think we can go out and start looking at some of this behavior and passage information at Rock Island Dam as we did in 2021. And then at the same time, you know, the reason we're looking to start building this data set is to ultimately have some knowledge as to how we could possibly optimize operations, specifically summer fish spill at Rock Island Dam. Currently, we are providing 20% of the daily average river flow as spill at Rock Island, specifically for subyearling Chinook passage. It is documented this way in the HCP agreement. And until we gain some site-specific knowledge on how subyearlings are interacting and passing the project area and Rock Island Dam, we really can't do much to optimize operations. So continue to build this data set that we've established in 2021 and moving forward in 2022. We'll provide essential data to the district to start looking at how we can optimize operations at Rock Island to boost project survival possibilities and calculations for subyearlings. And with that, I would open up to the Board of Commissioners for any questions, thoughts, comments.
Commissioners, any questions for Lance? All right. Lance, thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner McKenna.
Okay. Thanks, Lance. Resolution 11 is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for the purchase of the System Operations Backup Control Center bid number 20-17 and authorizing the System Operations Backup Control Center be obtained by negotiation. With us in the boardroom is Tim Dietering.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. It's good to be here. So this project is a requirement of the relocation out of our current facility here. So we're building a new backup control center for our system ops. We obtained an engineer's estimate from the design consultant at the end of last year, and based on that and with some contingencies, we established the engineer's estimate that was formally placed on the bid for comparisons. We have a mandatory pre-bid meeting on this because of the complexities of the project. And as that bid time that meeting time approached, we only had one bidder who had actually signed up. So we delayed the pre-bid meeting to contact as many other contractors as we could, which resulted in having five contractors and two subcontractors actually in attendance. However, when bids were received, we only received one bid. And that bidder came in with a bid that was 85% to 90% over the engineer's estimate, which is, of course, more than the 15% that we're allowed to consider, thus the requirement to reject the bids. Subsequently, I talked to that bidder, and he said that the reason his bid was so high was he lost his two primary subcontractors for mechanical and electrical at the last minute, and so he was basically just throwing swag numbers at this to try to come up with a bid amount. I also contacted the other bidders that had been on the list to find out why they hadn't bid, and there were a number of reasons ranging from too busy to one person going on vacation to some other concerns with the supply chain issues and things like that. The reason why we're requesting to negotiate rather than just go out for bid again is with our current bidding environment, we're seeing a lot more of this where contractors are just reluctant to put the time in if they feel like they're up against, you know, a lot of competition. Plus, it gives us the ability to actually look at specific options or specific requirements of the bid that we may be able to negotiate on. And that's why we'd like to have the ability to go out, contact the bidder whose bid we did receive, as well as a couple of the others, at least, on the list that we had talked to see if we could come up with a significantly better price. And that is kind of the general feeling among the project team, is that we should be able to bring that bid amount down considerably. Any questions or details that I can add to that?
Commissioners, any further questions there? Okay, I appreciate the information.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay, Resolution 13 is a resolution rescinding and replacing Resolution 18-14274. And adopting new telecommunication rates for wholesale telecommunication services by service providers on the district broadband system. This is the resolution you heard a background presentation on this morning. And with that, I'll turn it over to Bob.
Thank you, Kirk. Commissioner Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber Telecom. Started out this morning with giving you a quick update as to what has changed from the November 1st presentation on the rates. Generally, for all the rates, what we're trying to do is trying to best provide the most cost-effective solution for our service providers so they can provide a cost-conscious service to their end customers or customer owners. We talked about VLAN rates this morning, but if you recall back on November 1st, we also introduced some changes to the local digital local loop, which is a typical residential services. If I were to recap, what we did is we restructured the VLAN services and rates, again, to allow the providers to be most competitive in a very competitive environment. We are offering a new service that is the 10 gigabits per second, which is something that's it's evolving in the market. There's not a high use for that, but it is the next product that we're going to see on the market. We combined our aggregate bandwidth with our typical DLL rates to make the billing simpler for our providers. And at the same time, we offered up a symmetrical service for our customers, bringing a higher value for the same rate. And we are also added a wireless rate in there for the upcoming pilot programs that we may decide to deploy in testing our wireless solution to serve some of the remaining 10-15% of the county. So with that, we are seeking board approval for those rates as provided in the November 1st in the recent update that I gave with you gave you earlier this morning. With that, are there any questions that I can possibly answer for you?
I don't see any further questions. I think we asked those this morning. All right. Thank you, Bob. Any further comments, commissioners? Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob. Okay.
Thank you.
Next resolution is Resolution 14. It's a resolution amending the district's electric rate schedule 1 residential service to include provisions of the district's advanced metering infrastructure opt-out program as adopted by a resolution number 20-14414. And just as a intro, you might recall that this actually, the opt-out program was adopted by the board in 2020, and the language that's being presented here is simply in support of, it's the first time we've actually formalized the language of the opt-out program, so that's what you have in front of you in this resolution. And with us is Lindsay Mons.
Kirk, I'm not sure I really need to say much more. You did a great summary.
Sorry.
as Kirk stated, really, in late 2019, we started these discussions with the board and adopted the program in early 2020 for the opt-out program associated with the district's AMI project. We've since found it necessary to formalize this information in our rate schedules. And since those rate schedules are governed by the board, we're here today to let you know the changes that we're making there. It is only to rate schedule 1, which is our general residential rate schedule. Which is attached or exhibit A to the resolution itself. And the changes we made are on page 2, the 2 paragraphs under the title Advanced Metering Infrastructure Opt-Out. And those are just a summary of what was approved by the board in 2020.
Okay. Commissioners, questions, comments? All right. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lindsay. The next resolution is resolution agenda item 15, I should say. A resolution ratifying field work order change orders number 1, 2, 3 pre-construction and 1 GMP1, 2 GMP1, 3 GMP1, and 4 GMP1, and authorizing the issuance of a guaranteed maximum price amendment number 2 to North Bank Civil and Marine of Vancouver, Washington, to provide a guaranteed maximum price and schedule for the upgrade of units 1 and 2 under contract number 20-14 for the Rock Island Powerhouse number 2 draft tube gate cylinder and hydraulic power unit upgrade project. With us is Devin Myers to sort all of that out.
Thanks, Kirk. Well, I'll just take questions now. You pretty much laid it out there. I'll run through this one real quick. Yeah, my name's Devin Myers. Good afternoon. Project manager down at Rock Island Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation program. So the district entered into a design build contract including pre-construction with North Bank, as Kirk mentioned, in February of 2021. The district also executed a guaranteed maximum price in April of 2021 to purchase long lead equipment for about $1.23 million. In addition to guaranteed maximum price amendment number 1, 8 field work orders have been executed. So the new business that we're trying to do here today, item 1, is to ratify the executed field work orders. And as Kirk was saying, field work order 1, issued against the design build agreement, approved the project specifications. There were 3 work orders issued against the pre-construction services. All 3 of those were time extensions. And then 4 work orders have been issued against guaranteed maximum price amendment number 1, Field work orders number 1 and 4 extended the dates. Field work order 2 updated specifications as a result of our pre-construction services and design efforts. And then field work order number 3 reduced the contract price by about $115,000 of reduced engineering costs. Item 2 on this resolution is requesting approval for the general manager to execute guaranteed maximum price amendment number 2 for the installation of equipment purchased under GMP amendment number 1 on the first 2 units for a cost of about $1.67 million. The project budget for all 8 units will be reassessed, and after the installation of the first 2 after installation on the first 2 units is completed. And with that, I would take any questions if you have any.
Okay. Devin, thank you. Any further questions on that, commissioners? Okay.
So, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Devin. So we have resolutions 10, 11, 13, 14, and 15. Do I have a motion for those?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of resolutions 10, 11, 13, 14, 15 as presented. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Resolutions 10, 11, 12, 14, and 15 are approved. Okay. Thank you very much. Kirk, we have finished manager items on 16, commission travel. We finished number 18, 19, follow-up of delegation items from previous board meeting.
Yep, just have one item, and that was that Neil Nerutsos was going to schedule time with Commissioners McKenna and Arsenault to talk further with Michael Miner on the Confluence Parkway sound study, and that has been scheduled.
We're going to be doing that tomorrow.
That was the only item on 19 there.
Okay. Delegation of action items from today.
So far, we've got 2. We've got a request to Sean to look at what it would take to include snow pack information on the current app. And if it is acceptable to you, we would put that just on the list of potential upgrades for the current app. But we will circle back with the amount of time necessary to do that regardless.
Okay.
Both Lake Chelan and Canada, you said.
Yep, I see Commissioner Bowles shaking his head.
Yes, correct.
Thank you.
And then we had another one for Bob Shane to provide information on how the VLAN rate changes will impact schools, and that's been provided by email to you just in the last half an hour.
Okay.
Oh, all right. I guess 5 minutes ago.
Great, thank you very much. So at this time, I will open up for additional public comment. If anybody from the public would like to address the commission at this time.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Can you hear me okay?
We can, Malachi. Thank you.
Malachi Salcedo, 615 North Wenatchee Avenue. Good to see you all this afternoon.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
We can hear you.
Wonderful. Curious if you have an update as to the status of your consideration on my request from 2 weeks ago and potential ETA to district decision.
We are still working on that, and I don't have an ETA, but we're still working on that.
Okay. Greatly appreciate your efforts. I know you have a lot going on. One important aspect from my perspective, is that I'm incurring approximately $25,000 a week in marginal electrical costs. So since January 1, that equals approximately $225,000 of additional power costs at my Chelan site. So I respect that the process takes time, but as you do consider my request, please do also consider that weekly cost, and then also please consider specifically my request to make it retroactive to January 1 as I'm incurring those costs while I'm. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca, do we have anybody else on the online that is looking to speak to us?
I do not see any digital hands raised.
Okay. Do we have any other matters of general business as may necessarily come before the commission today? Kirk, did I miss anything?
Nope. You didn't. Just the need to move into executive session.
Okay, so at this time, we will recess and to go into general or to executive session, excuse me, to discuss with legal counsel, agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.110, and to plan the strategy or position to be taken during the course of collective bargaining as authorized by RCW 42.30.140. So at this time, we will recess, and we will be coming back out of executive session. How much time do we think we need to take, Kirk?
I'm going to say approximately 2 hours.
Okay. So we will come out of executive session in 2 hours. So at this time, we'll recess. Thank you. We are coming out of executive session. It is March 7th, 2022. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned.